Dr. Richard Deo, a trained medical doctor and university professor and the Kaiser Permanente Endowed Professor of Evidence-Based Medicine in the Department of Family Medicine at Oregon Health and Science University. Dr. Deo is a primary care doctor. He practiced primary care medicine in a university setting for over 25 years. He's authored over 300 scientific articles, mostly concerning back pain, and he served on several national panels for developing clinical guidelines and research standards on low back pain. Dr. Deo has just published a new book titled Watch Your Back and subtitled How the Back Pain Industry is Costing Us More and Giving Us Less, and What You Can Do to Inform and Empower Yourself in Seeking Treatment. Now, Dr. Deo joins us on the phone to discuss his new book. Dr. Deo, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
You know, the book is fascinating, full of a lot of detail that we obviously don't have time to get into. So you and I will have to figure out how to get through this and get the main message to folks about what you're covering. And maybe you could just set the scene for us with some basic facts on back pain and major trends in its treatment in the U.S. in the recent past, and that prompted you or inspired you to write this book.
Yeah. Well, you know, the back pain problem is an important specific issue that's embedded in the whole concern that we have about how medical care is delivered in this country. I think many people have the perception that medical care is too expensive in this country and that we're often disappointed with the quality of care that we get and the results of care that we get. These are real concerns that many people have, and I think that back pain and the treatment for back pain sort of exemplifies how that plays out and some of the best examples of those problems. That is to say, patients are often disappointed with the care they get for back problems and often find it unexpectedly expensive. So this really sort of exemplifies some of the challenges we have in our healthcare system. It's an extremely common problem. Nearly all of us are going to have back pain at some time in our lives. And for some smaller fraction of us, it will turn out to be an ongoing problem that really becomes very bothersome, potentially disabling, and certainly expensive.
Where does it rank in the medical care industry in terms of the frequency of the problem and its cost to treat?
Yeah, well, it ranks very high. If you look worldwide, the World Health Organization has actually done a nice study that suggests that worldwide, back pain may be the leading cause of disabling problems all over the world. And certainly in the U.S., it's probably the leading cause of work disability. And as far as healthcare costs go, we've tried to estimate what the average costs of medical care are for someone who has back pain compared to similar people of the same age and gender who don't have back pain. And our best estimate is that patients who have a back problem cost an additional $86 billion a year in terms of overall costs. That may not be the most expensive medical problem in the country, but it ranks right up there with things like cancer and diabetes and other very expensive problems.
That is amazing. And what is it, would you say, about the back that makes it the source of so much trouble and pain compared with other parts of the body or even other diseases?
Well, you know, people speculate about this all the time, and we sometimes blame upright posture and various things that have to do with human evolution, and those indeed may be an important part of the concern. Another issue, though, is that the discs in the spine that sit between the vertebrae, the sort of cushions between the vertebrae, tend to wear out with aging. And in many ways, it's like wrinkles and gray hair. The sort of wearing out of the disc is another sign of aging that comes fairly early, actually, and affects most of us, and may be part of the problem that sort of contributes to early onset and ongoing problems with back pain.
I suppose it's also true, since we have much more longevity now, that we have more back pain as the older we get.
Yeah, but basically that's true. The older we get, the more likely we are to have some problem, and certainly there are plenty of older adults that have back pain. And of course, in older people, there are some very specific problems that can contribute to that, like osteoporosis mm-hmm. and the sort of collapse of vertebrae that occurs with osteoporosis. But nonetheless, whatever the cause, it certainly becomes more common as we get older.
Is there any indication that this prominence or prevalence of back pain is somehow connected to modern lifestyle?
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting you ask about that. You would think, on the one hand, that as we've sort of eliminated more and more hard labor type jobs, and we've automated more jobs in the workplace, more robots and so forth, that maybe there would be fewer jobs that cause back pain or back problems. On the other hand, though, we're a society where a lot of our work is sedentary. We're often sitting behind a desk or sitting at a computer all day long, and that seems to be a risk factor for back problems as well. So that's probably a contributor, and of course, we're also facing this, an epidemic of overweight and obesity in this country, and that probably contributes to the back problem also.
Well, let's maybe get a little idea of the different types of back issues and then start talking about the treatment industry, if we can. So, I've jotted down here your notes on acute back pain or persistent back pain or herniated discs, or, you know, are those three of the major categories of different pain?
Well, yeah, they're overlapping, of course, to mm-hmm. some degree, but important distinctions to make, I think. The people who have acute back pain, which in medical terms really means just recent onset, so
it's back pain is just all of a sudden your back goes out kind of thing.
All of a sudden your back goes out kind of a thing. So it's something that hasn't gone on for more than a few weeks, typically. And people with that problem usually get better. They get better on their own, and there really is a natural healing process that goes on. And I can confidently tell patients like that, you're going to get better. May take a few weeks, might even take a couple of months, but you're going to get better, and it's almost always true. That doesn't mean they won't have future back problems, because recurrence or relapsing of back pain is pretty common as well, but usually people get better from that too. But that's different from the people who develop chronic back pain or persistent back pain that just keeps going on and on. And that's a much smaller portion of the world, but that actually turns out to be the group that incurs the most medical care needs and the most medical care costs, and often finds the treatments the most disappointing. And then there's the group that you mentioned of people with a herniated disc. That's a very specific problem. Might be an acute onset, or might be something that sort of comes on more gradually. And that really is a problem that typically results in pain that radiates down the leg that we call sciatica, and is often quite severe pain. But again, there's a chance that can heal on its own, and doesn't necessarily mean that somebody's really forced to have surgery.
And you also talk about how common that is among people who don't have back pain as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the interesting problems that we face as doctors, is that MRI scans seem almost like magic. And yet, they're often misleading. The problem is that lots of normal, pain-free people have terrible-looking MRI scans of the back, including things like herniated discs. And in fact, most of us have a bulging or degenerated, that's just a worn-out disc. And again, these are mostly just signs of aging. So Even a third of people have herniated discs with no back pain or sciatica. So you can appreciate that when we see these things on a scan, we have to realize we might not really be looking at the source of the pain at all. But both doctors and patients may find these things alarming when they see them, and that sometimes sets off a cascade of more testing and treatment, injections, surgery, drugs, and so forth that may or may not be so beneficial.
Yeah, let's just talk a little bit about you are pretty critical of sort of over-testing and over-treatment of back pain without any good evidence that it's doing any more good than just letting time pass or something like that. Would you comment on that?
Yeah. Well, it's important to remember that time is really in your favor most of the time with back problems. Most people do get better, and that's a result of natural healing that goes on in the spine, and even with herniated discs. Those herniated discs that sometimes press on a nerve tend to actually improve over time. If we do repeat MRI scans, we actually can see this. And so many people do improve on their own. But we've had over the last 20 years or so just dramatic increases in the use of a variety of treatments for back pain. So, for example, the use of narcotic painkillers has increased fourfold just over the span of about 15 years. The use of a particular type of surgery called spinal fusion surgery has increased several 100% over the past 20 years. The use of spinal injections has increased several 100% over the past 20 years. And that sounds like it might be a good thing, but it turns out that when we look at national surveys, people who have back pain are actually reporting more and more disability, more and more interference with their daily lives, instead of less over those last 10 or 20 years. So it seems like we're doing ever more intensive treatment and yet not getting much for it.
For our listeners who just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Richard Deo, a medical doctor and a university professor in Oregon, who's just written a book called Watch Your Back about the back pain epidemic, essentially, in this country and the treatment issues that have arisen. It's so impossible to get into all these things. I'm so interested in the whole topic after reading the book. And you also describe what you call complementary and alternative medicine. We all know about chiropractic and sort of the rise of that and the controversy surrounding it. And you describe it as being kind of a detente right now between the doctors and chiropractors. And what are your findings and what are the studies' findings as to the effect of chiropractic in back pain?
Well, certainly chiropractic is one of the most popular types of treatment and accounts for a lot of the health care that people get for back problems. We've studied chiropractic care ourselves, and there have been a fair number of studies comparing chiropractic treatment with more conventional medical care from an MD. And the truth is they work about equally well. They both seem to help. And from my perspective, it looks like the chiropractic manipulation in many ways may be safer than some of the medications and the treatments that we often prescribe. So I think for someone who's inclined to pursue that type of treatment, it's perfectly reasonable.
You also talk about massage in the same breath, sort of, and that it seems like, and I thought this before I saw you say it in the book, that touching the patient in a way has a positive effect, even acupuncture.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. So massage and spinal manipulation and acupuncture are probably the most common of these complementary and alternative treatments for back pain, and they all involve just the human touch, and I think that's probably important for all of us. Both physically and psychologically, and maybe an important aspect of why these things seem to help.
As you say, it's sometimes really difficult for the medical profession to diagnose what is causing the pain. And I know there's new research on brain functioning, and you call it, I think, neural modulation.
Yeah.
That the brain has an effect on pain, on creating pain or removing it.
Yeah, this is something we're really just learning about, and we have a long way to go. But there are more and more research studies that show that, first of all, there are some genetic factors that make certain patients or certain people more susceptible to developing long-term pain and chronic back pain. So there's some genetic things to start with. But then we also suspect that there are some changes that actually occur within the brain and in the spinal cord as a result of having ongoing pain problems. So we can actually identify changes in brain structure and changes in the function of the brain that seem to correlate with the ongoing pain that patients may have. And this actually has the sort of perverse effect that it can actually make the pain continue well beyond the time when healing of tissues in the spine is actually complete. So we see pain that goes on well beyond any injury in the tissues, and the treatment for that is something that we're just trying to begin to understand.
So you're thinking, like, for example, some way of electrodes on the brain or something like that could help identify where you could turn off the pain?
Well, the tests that actually are turning out to be the most helpful are fancy versions of MRI scans, so-called functional MRI, that actually let us see, in a sense, where the blood supply to the brain is increasing or decreasing, and we can actually see these changes in real time in the laboratory. And so these tests and some similar tests like it that really sort of measure metabolism in different parts of the brain are the things that are giving us the clue. And in terms of treatment, right now it seems sort of implausible almost, but there actually is some evidence that things like exercise interventions may actually affect the brain. So there's sort of a not only a mind-body connection, but a body-mind connection going the other direction.
Getting the segue into here, the exercise remedy or treatment for back that you are obviously very in much in favor of, and you give some great examples of successes where people had tried everything else and then got into your chapter is called Boot Camp.
Yeah.
So why don't you describe what that a little bit for the listeners as to?
Yeah. The term boot camp was actually one that was coined by a journalist who watched one of these programs in action and watched the patients in it. Basically, a program that typically involves a physical therapist who works with a rehabilitation specialist, a physician, to try to design an exercise program for people that are having chronic back pain that will help to actually get them more active, increase their ability to do normal activities of daily living, and ultimately reduce the pain. And so I've described in the book a couple of people, including some prominent individuals and even doctors, who have gone through programs like this, often find it difficult at first, but then actually experience some dramatic improvements in both the pain and their quality of life that really let them get back to doing things they want to do. And that sometimes occurs after they've already been through previous operations and injections and drug therapy and so forth. So I think it's really an important mainstay, if you will, for treating persistent back problems.
And the interesting thing was it's always been, you know, the feeling, because I've had a back twinges or whatever from time to time, that, boy, I got to sit still. I can't move with this, or it's going to send a wave of pain into my back or down my leg. And so it's sort of counterintuitive to hear the physical therapist say, work right through the pain.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, it really represents sort of a philosophical change in the physical therapy community over the past few years. It used to be we'd sort of say, let pain be your guide, and if it hurts, you shouldn't be doing it. And now it's often the case that the physical therapists, once they've evaluated the situation and know that it's safe, will try to push people and realize that sometimes it's just important to work through the discomfort, which especially occurs when people first start exercising, and keep going to get the additional stretch and strength and flexibility that really makes a difference in the long term.
We're obviously not going to be able to get to everything I wanted to get to. You have two chapters toward the end where you're giving patients some advice on how to take charge more of their own treatment and to ask questions to become more informed. That's a very interesting chapter. I highly recommend it for folks who are suffering in a quandary as to what to do. And then you end up a chapter with on chapter on policy issues, and maybe pick one of those which you think is important. You talked about the use of guidelines. That's maybe a little too complicated. The insurance coverages and regulations of drugs and devices, how about those?
Yeah, the insurance coverage, I think, is a real big issue. As many patients will realize, it's often much harder to get insurance to pay for things like physical therapy or relaxation therapy or so-called cognitive behavioral therapy, interventions that might come from a mental health specialist. Much harder to get those things paid for than getting painkillers or spine imaging or surgery. So I think there's a real need for reform there.
Well, you have a lot of other great suggestions for policy issues that arise out of the information you're providing in the book. Where can folks find this book? I'm just afraid we're running out of time here.
Yeah, you bet. Well, it should be available in many the usual places, available online at Amazon and other booksellers, and in many bookstores, so it should be easy to find.
Is there anything that you'd like to add specifically to our conversation before
we
wind it
up? I guess maybe a final alert is just that it may be unwise to sit back and expect that someone else is going to fix your back problem, because it often just doesn't work that way, and the more involved you can be in treatment and treatment decisions, the likely better off you're going to be.
Dr. Dale, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us here. It's an incredibly interesting and important topic to so many people, and I think your book is very helpful. And we didn't even get into the whole issue of how's the response been. And, I'm sure you've been quite openly critical of some treatment programs and devices and manufacturers and so on. So I congratulate you for standing up and saying what's right.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for inviting me to the show.